Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Everybody, welcome to the Super J-Cast. I'm Joel, joined by David McDonald. It is Wednesday the 26th of March, 2025. This is episode 355. How's it going, Damon?
We're good. Feeling fine. Feeling good in the neighborhood, as Applebee's would say. Applebee's. What a fucking dump. Joel, you've been doing it. Do they have Applebee's out there?
No, never good. Been to an Applebee's. What is Applebee's?
Applebee's is a shit chain restaurant that likes to sell watered down drinks and microwaved food. It's garbage. Good. I'm glad to hear that there is.
Sounds like my house.
That is not true. How dare you?
It is. A lot of the time it is true. A lot of the time I go to supermarkets and go to the discount aisle where they put all the stuff that's just about to go out of date.
Okay.
And I buy lots of stuff from there. And we just eat out of expired microwave convenience meals for a while. And then I feel guilty and I'll start cooking stuff. I cooked a delicious Japanese curry, a nice beef curry last night, which came after a wave of guilt about buying expired supermarket convenience meals, but
there's absolutely nothing wrong with
it. Comes in peaks and troughs like that.
Yep, nothing wrong with that at all. When we go food shopping, it's there's the times I go because I want to go to a specific supermarket, a grocery store, and it's a drive. it's like a 20-minute drive, but it's so big and they have so much good stuff and they have prepared foods and they hit you right when you walk in the fucking door, dude. Hit you right when they walk in the door. It's all this great shit, and you get in line to check out, and you're like, well, let me refi my house. expensive. But no, there's nothing wrong with that. And like like you said, peaks and valleys, ebbs and flows, all that stuff. You just you work all fucking day. The last thing you want to do is like, ugh, and I'm going to defrost a pork chop? Fuck that. Let me get the prepared meals. Yeah, nothing wrong with that at all. I'm a fan.
Like getting a slow cooker out. If I've got some time, I'll bust out a curry or something, or chili con carne, something like that. And I will leave it overnight.
Right.
And then I'll wake up the next morning and sort of sneaking up in the middle of the night, just check on it, give it a little stir, give it a little taste. And then I'm excited for the whole day because I know it's coming. But it's only as and when the mood hits me. I can't do it with any regularity. I can't be depended upon to be cooking at any regular intervals. But we've got Slurm316 in the chat is talking about Applebee's. It's essentially the Little Chef of the USA. I love Little Chef. They've all gone, I think. They were sort of like a roadside cafe that they'd always be paired up with these little motel chain called Travelodge. Mm-hmm. Me and my family went on a lot of Travelodge holidays when I was little. And the first thing that we'd do, me and my sister, when we got into the Travelodge hotel room, would get the Little Chef menu and start deciding what we were going to have for breakfast.
Aww.
That was the most thrilling bit of the holiday, just looking at those lovely coloured laminated menus and thinking, oh, I'm going to have the Little Chef's early starter. Oh, I'm going to have the Olympic breakfast. And then the Little Chef, if you cleaned your plate, if you finished all your foods, you would get this lollipop, aww, which had fizzy sherbet in the middle. I don't know if they wouldn't give it to you if you didn't actually finish all your food, but that's what it said in the menu at least. And I lived and died by that, so I would always finish my food and get my little lollipop. And
aww.
They've all gone. Little Chefs are gone. I'm sad now.
There is something. I don't know, comforting in the fact that, you know, it is that, did that fucking dog just shit on my lawn? They better clean that up. I'm watching them. All right, there you go. Get the bag out.
Not the worst thing a pet's done, Damon. I came home this morning, this afternoon after work, and found this adorable little cute bunny just dead lying next to our driveway. And it was like the cutest bunny ever. Like, do you want me? Can I send you a picture? Is that going to distress you if I send you a picture?
Rabbit?
A dead rabbit.
Why did you take a picture of a dead rabbit?
That's not the point. The point is, can I send it to you?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Oh, God.
But just so you can see how cute it is. So
dead.
We were driving down the driveway and Arthur said, oh, it's a shrew. And I was like, uh-oh, because Scrumpy brings in a lot of shrews. But shrews are tiny. And then as we got closer and I saw it lying there, I was like, that's not a shrew, buddy. It was getting bigger and bigger as we got closer. Can you see it? It's the cutest little bunny. It's absolutely like adorable. It's this a little baby bunny just had its neck broken from Scrumpy grabbing it by the throat and flinging it about. And Arthur's going, oh, the bunny's sleeping. I was like, it's not sleeping, pal. It's dead. It's dead, bro.
I would have been like, yep, sleeping. We better not wake him up. It was in your driveway? Is that like, so?
It was like a kind of bank next to our driveway. Okay. So it's just like little grassy slope.
But we considered then, your property, right?
Yeah, I left it there. And then Mally came home and she's screaming because she's like, Scrumpy's playing with the rabbit. So Scrumpy's outside. He's found it again because he killed it and just left it there. Like, no interested in eating it.
Oh, my God. Really? Wow.
And then he's just like picking it up by the neck and flinging it into the air. And Mally's screaming at me, telling me to get rid of it. So she gives me like this plastic glove. And she tells me to go out there and tells me to throw this dead bunny over the hedge into the fields. And the kids are coming out watching me. And I'm like, oh, God, what is going on in my life? This is not good.
I know. I would have to be the one to clean up because Cheryl would be the same way. She would just be fucking – she would come in the house and be like, that's a fucking dead rabbit. And I'm like, oh, I guess I got to do it, right? And I would just get like a shovel and just like shovel it up and then just chuck it. Yeah. Oh, did you see me? Oh my God.
I'm sending you the video. I didn't realize Mally took a video of me throwing the dead rabbit over the hedge.
Oh God. Oh Lord. I like your pajamas. Nice.
Yeah, thank you. As soon as I get home, I have to take off my adult clothes and put on my baby clothes.
I'm with you, dude. No, trust me.
And I was cross as well because I got dragged away from my new game of Elden Ring. I've got back into that.
Yeah. I snap off my bra immediately. I just take it right off.
Yeah.
Let my tits out.
Yeah.
I hate being on. And you know, you have like a dead bird in the driveway or some shit. It's always right in front. It's like always our house. Like there's somebody else. I'm sure it happens to other people, but I feel like it's me. I feel like people are killing small animals in front of my house. But luckily, to wrap up the this side of the story, said poop has been cleaned. Thank God. I don't know. I must have the most comfortable fucking lawn for every goddamn dog owner in this neighborhood. They love my lawn. Absolutely fucking love it. And oh, here we go. I told you this. I hate the summer. I fucking hate it because everybody has a dumb dog and they all bark and they all just fucking chill. We have it's a pandemic. It's an epidemic. Pandemic and epidemic. It's a demic. This fucking dog. So here's my house. I'm in my office and my office is like in the front of the house kind of, and I can oversee the street. And then there's a set of houses on the other side of the street. And then on the other side is the back of the house on the street, you know, parallel to mine. There's a dog in that house and it is like one of these hound kind of dogs. And I can see them. I can see when they let the dog out because they have this very high deck. And I can hear them. I can hear that fucking dog. Like, when I tell you crystal clear. It is this how constantly. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Is it David Finlay and the boys?
It is. I think it is. I think you may be onto something. It's just like, God damn. Like, people would just buy dogs and they just let them do whatever the fuck they want. It's just so annoying. It's not the dog's fault. It's the fucking owners. And I hate every one of them. I really do. I despise them. Thank you.
All right. This is Old Man Rants About Dog on His Lawn, episode 350. Yeah. No, I'm joking. You're not old.
I am old. Oh, make no mistake about it. I am old as fuck. Not as fuck, but like I'm pushing as fuck. Like I'm old. I acknowledge it. I get it. I'm coming close. As fuck is right around the corner. I'm not lying. I'm starting to get, we have this, we have AARP. What is it? Americans something. I don't even know what it stands for. What does AARP stand
for? I'm aware of it. I can't remember what the exact initialism
is. Yeah, but it's for old people, retired per people or something like that. Yeah, I started getting those letters. Yeah. I started getting those I'm on the mailing list. I was like, well, fuck me. Look at this. Look at that. Yeah, I'm getting fucking junk mail from them now. God damn it. Well, at least my dick still works somewhat.
This would be the perfect moment to segue to some sort of blue pill, erection pill.
Yeah.
Sponsorship, but sadly we don't have one. We don't have any sponsors.
Nah,
but,
we ran them
what out. We do have is great Patreon supporters.
We sure do.
And people who subscribe would know that you, Damon, dropped your first bit of solo audio on the Patreon, a little bit of instant reaction to the New Japan Cup final. So if you want that piece of audio, get your fucking wallet out. $10. Patreon. Boom.
Boom,
more
boom.
Like that to come.
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, it's really about the inspiration and the time all aligning, all the moons aligning. And I knew you were away and I knew we wanted to get some shit up there for our loyal Patreons. It didn't take that long and it was just right off the cuff. I mean, which is not much different than this fucking show. And it was fun. It's good. No problem there. And hopefully there'll be more. So, yeah, as Joel would say, get your fucking wallets out. Let's go.
I've watched some excellent TV lately, Damon, and there's this new TV series called Adolescence, which has just taken the country by storm. I was wondering if that has permeated the States, or is that just a UK thing?
I couldn't tell you. Joel, you know me. I don't know fucking dick all about TV shows. What's new? Give me the short synopsis of what it's about. Don't spoil it for me because I'm gonna go run and watch it. But what are we talking here?
So an innocent young man is radicalized after joining this online community of weirdos who sort of poison his brain.
Our Discord. And
end up you fucking ruined the. That was the whole bit.
I'm sorry.
That's it. You know me too well by this point. That's exactly where it was going to go.
I'm so
sorry.
But
yeah, no, it's kind of about that. It's about a 13-year-old kid who is arrested on suspicion of murdering a classmate of his in school, and it's four episodes. Each episode's an hour, and it's incredible because each hour-long episode is one long uninterrupted take. There's no cuts, no scenes. It just it's unbelievable. Because I've seen movies and TV shows and stuff where they've done those kinds of shots for like, I don't know, like 8 minutes or something where they've, you know, they got a bit fancy with it. But like the whole episode is just one uninterrupted cut. It's like breathtaking and almost quite distracting because while I'm watching it, whilst the story is amazing and the acting is brilliant, I'm still just sort of like, what, how have they managed to do this? I don't watch a huge amount of TV and a lot of stuff gets really overrated, but I would strongly recommend anyone who's not seen it to go out of their way, like run, don't walk, to watch Adolescence because I think it's a game changer. And episode 3 in particular, after watching it, you know, it's like, I don't know if you experience this, but sometimes when you watch something where you're just like, fuck me, that was like the best bit of television I've watched for years. Yeah. Like, I needed to go and have a little sit down and think about it afterwards. Right. Mally's obsessed with it now. She doesn't watch a huge amount of TV, but she's sending me all this shit about it on Instagram. So it's just absolutely gripping stuff. So
wow.
Yeah. Adolescence. I think it's on Netflix. Go check it out, people.
Love it. All right. I love that. Like, when you describe that, the first thing that popped in my mind was the Goodfellas scene where they're going through the back of the restaurant. And how,
yeah,
you know, that and how chaotic that scene is, and it's just one shot and the camera's following them. That sounds pretty awesome, though. That, I mean, I appreciate fucking creativity, especially in this day, where it seems like everything's a copy of a copy of a copy of it. Yeah, give me some creativity, something. That's good. I like that. All right, Adolescence. All right. I mean, look, at least I wrote it down. I have it written down. So, what is it, on Netflix, or where can I see this?
Yeah, it is Netflix. Yeah.
Right. I'll give it a shot. I'll give it a shot. How about that? I'll give it a shot. I can't promise, but if I'm hooked on it, I'm going to be all in. So you're going to get texts about it. You're going to get nonsense about it. I will be discussing it, you know, and you'll know it because it'll happen. That's my life. That's my life.
And I've got the attention span of a gnat. So anytime I'm watching something, I'll have my phone out and I'm fucking about on social media. But this one, I didn't, because I was just gripped.
That's good.
From start to finish. And like I said, that episode three, where it's not spoiling anything, but it's basically the entire episode in one room. And it's just a conversation between this kid and a psychologist. And it is just the most compelling piece of TV I think I've ever seen. Like, wow. In terms of extracting the maximum drama and excitement and emotion out of what it is, which is two people talking in a room, words are failing me for how good it is.
Wow. Is it like, is there anybody that we would know that's in it?
It features Stephen Graham, who you might know from This Is England. I think he was in Snatch. He's been in quite a lot of stuff.
I think I saw
I think he wrote it or wrote some of it.
Yeah. I think I saw
it. So, yeah, he plays the character Combo in This Is England.
That's the music. He's like one, a
stocky,
right?
Muscular Scouse guy.
Yeah.
It's set in like the 80s.
Yeah, like skinheady. About, guys. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
I think I saw that. I think I did see that. All right. Cool.
Yeah, you'll probably recognize Stephen Graham when you see him in it. But.
Okay. All right.
Well, typical masculine Scouse dad.
All right. Well, this has been TV.
That's
review.
My boy. No, I'm not going to do accents.
Do it.
No accents.
No, you got to do accents.
I'll get myself in trouble.
Do we get in trouble when we do accents?
No, but I'm scared that I will.
Oh, really? Is that a thing where people get in trouble for doing accents? I thought that was a no. That's awful.
I don't want to insult and alienate our Liverpudlian listenership, Damon.
I mean, I think we do a fine job in other ways of doing that. But, really, that would be so. If somebody made fun of my South Jersey, Philadelphia-ish accent, I wouldn't give a fuck. But if I said,
I think it depends on the
context,
balance of power, doesn't it? Yeah,
I guess. I mean, I guess. I don't know.
If you are sort of imitating the accent of like some sort of minority group who've been like systematically oppressed historically, then probably not okay.
Right.
But if mocking your Yankoid imbecile accent, I think it's fair game.
Hey, we have no power anymore. Oh, actually, we got power. We got a lot of power. We like tariffs. We like tariffing.
Tariffs.
Tariff. Or tariff you.
The eggs. All the eggs. What's going on with the eggs?
Eggs are down. Eggs are down. Eggs are normal. Everything's fine.
The egg is down. The egg is down, people.
Get
it's egg discourse on the Super J cast. Egg report. The egg report is now.
Ladies and gentlemen, eggs. I believe we're down to like $2.50, $3, something like that. It's not that bad. The eggs are fine. Eggs are fine. Gas is the gasoline.
I love an egg.
Your petrol, if you will. Down. Yeah, things are just, we're just booming along. We're just firing on all cylinders now, Joel.
I'm just starting to write the outline of a sort of Mad Max style dystopian future where eggs are used as currency after the breakdown of civilized society.
That'll be too Sunnyside, please. Oh, wow, my God. It's killing me. Speaking of which, that just reminded me of, do you ever see that movie? I think it was Justin Timberlake, I'm going to say. I could be dead wrong. Where you paid, like, currency was time.
Time, yes, yeah. I saw that in the cinema in Thailand.
Me too.
In Time, was it called?
Was it In Time? Was that what it was called? I thought the concept of that was so fucking crazy cool. And I don't know why it just popped into my head, because I haven't seen it in a billion years, speaking of time.
My problem with that, you know, when they did like the sort of arm wrestle sequences where they would sort of be stealing time off each other?
Yes.
They never really explain how that works.
Ah, come on.
It's like, oh, if you sort of twist their arm at the right angle, you manage to like siphon off all their minutes.
Right.
It's just like, no, just trust us. Look, it works.
Right.
Don't question the logic.
Right. Right. Bluetooth in the arm. It connects. And yeah. Okay. But yes, I don't know. I did like the premise of that. I thought that was really cool. That'll cost you 3 weeks, sir.
Oh,
geez. Okay. You want to talk pro wrestling, or you just want to talk bullshit?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's talk pro wrestling. Let's talk about the New Japan Cup finals. What? How do we want to do this? Chronologically? Reverse chronologically?
However you want to do it. I mean, look, I think the...
Let's do chronologically. Let's build up to it.
Do it.
Yeah. So, this... I suppose we should do attendance talk, shouldn't we? People like attendance talk. This is in Niigata. Mm-hmm. And it did a number of 3,271, which is quite good. So that's a good, that's a big number, a good number.
Yeah. I'll take it. That's a good number, right? No,
this is me looking up on Cage Match what the other numbers were, because okay. I suppose we need to judge in context, don't we? And a competent co-host would have done this research beforehand.
No, we talk,
but not me. That's not how I roll.
No, yeah. Spread them all.
So I'm scrolling through Cage Match as we speak, baby.
Go ahead. I think it's going to be. I'm gonna say.
I've got it.
Okay, can I guess that it was less than last year's, but not much.
So, I don't know because I'm not very good at navigating Cage Match. What did I say the number was?
I don't know. Do it again. Somebody, I don't know.
This is rubbish. Even by our standards. Okay. 3,271.
Okay.
And last year's New Japan Cup final did 3,003.
See, there you go. Look at me. Look at me with the Nostradamical counting of heads. No. But that's not bad. I mean, that's, what's the difference? 25 people there? Well, come on. That's nothing. That's nothing. I mean, Walker Stewart makes up
about
for at least
100
three
less.
What? I didn't mean that.
100 less, 100 fewer
yeah.
than the New Japan Cup final in 2023.
Okay.
Which was Sanada versus David Finlay. So I think we need to go back to Sanada as champion pronto to get butts in seats.
Okay. I think you are. Wrong. Well, maybe. I would not want that. But David, interestingly enough, David Finlay, both of those. So that's a thing. David Finlay outdrew David Finlay. How about that? Pretty good. All right. So do you want to go matchy by matchy, or you want to go backwards? You want to go matchy.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Matchy. Kickoff match was Toriano and Tomohiro Ishii defeating Katsuya Murashima and Yoshihashi in 7 minutes 11 seconds. Ishii got the submission win over Murashima, 7 minutes 11 seconds, Boston Crab. I was and continue to be impressed by Katsuya Murashima. Now, I'm not saying he is going to be a future world champion or anything, but from a guy who showed almost nothing remarkable for most of his run up until this point. I like this kind of gimmick he's rolling with now as this roly-poly sort of chunky boy with the early Sammo Hung pudding bowl haircut who hits people really hard and slaps them.
Yes.
That was really good. I thought he showed really good fire in this. And credit to Ishii for making him look good and taking those big slaps, because he didn't have to do that.
Nope.
For a young line opener, he would have been well within his right to just phone it in and sleepwalk through the match. But no, he went out of his way to exchange bombs with Murashima. And yeah, I'm seeing something with him. Again, not to say I think he's going to be an ace or anything, but something interesting there where I think there's a potential spot for him as like a, I think I've said before, a powerhouse junior heavyweight, because he's quite a short man, relatively speaking.
Stocky.
But I kind of, yeah, I like his aesthetic. I like the kind of roundness of him. It pleases me. He's like a weeble.
Weeble wobble, but they don't fall down. Let me ask you, do you like Young Lion versus Young Lion matches, singles matches, or do you prefer a Young Lion in a tag match situation with well-established veterans? If you had to choose.
I think both. I don't know. I mean, they'd serve different purposes, don't they?
They do. They do.
I think it's more exciting when they're going off against an established name, like an Ishii, and you're, because that sort of, it's sort of, by comparison, you've got that yardstick of someone who's been there and done it all in the company, right. And then this little upstart is stepping up to them and hitting them in the face, and that's quite spicy. That's quite thrilling, seeing that happening, because you're seeing a youngster sort of upset the natural order of things, where they're supposed to be the submissive Kohais, aren't they? And just meekly lying down and, you know, not upsetting the apple cart, but he got right in Ishii's face, and I find that very, very exciting.
Yeah, like I there are times when, trust me, I like the individual young lion matches. You know, you kind of, you, because you know there is a sense of unpredictability at times. I mean, I know that there have been quote rivalries that, you know, have been completely lopsided. I get it, but I do like the fact that is unpredictable in the tag matches. While you're pretty much guaranteed the Young Lion looking at the lights, I feel like they can kind of stretch their legs a little bit, and it really depends upon who they're in there with. But it does feel like a lot of the older guys allow them to get a little bit more, again, a little more wiggle room to kind of, I don't know, get a little fire under them. Or, I mean, again, they're not hitting a fucking blockbuster suplex or anything crazy. But I don't know. It just feels like they have a little bit more room to stretch their legs, as opposed to being in that somewhat formula pattern Young Lion match. So I liked it. I thought it was fine. You know. And again, you're right. Having Ishii do anything, like, he could have just fucking stood there and been like, "Fuck you, boom, your clothesline done." But yeah, once again, I try to allow myself plenty of wiggle room, if you will, when it comes to evaluating their wrestling, because I always think that's, you know, they're all pretty good. But it's just about, you know, what can you bring to the table? What fire can you bring? How can we find a way to get behind you? Yeah, I think mission accomplished in this match. Sure.
First match was the NJPW World TV Championship Open Challenge, where El Fantasmo got his fourth successful defense against TJP, 11 minutes, 36 seconds, via roll-up.
Yeah.
Was this match as good as the main event?
No. No, it was good. Okay. I thought the main event was better. You thought this match was better?
No, but there's been a lot of controversy about a particular review, and I'm not going to name the person because I like him and I think he's a great writer, but it was just funny because this person rated this match and the main event exactly the same on the star ratings. And you know me, I think star ratings are a bit silly, but right. People just went into meltdown at that. They're like, "What? I can't believe you've done that." And
wow.
They, you know, very, very calmly and politely tried to explain their thinking behind it. But I just found it very funny seeing people get really upset by it.
Really? People were losing their shit from that. Okay. Yeah. Well, listen, everybody's got, a review is objective. Objective? Yes, it's objective. Kind of. No, and subjective.
It's subjective.
That's the one I want. Subjective. Not objective. It's subjective. Right. It is a review of person.
Unless it's me giving a review, in which case it is absolute truth.
Right.
Undisputed fact.
Yes, it is gospel, if you will. Yeah, I can't on any fucking Earth 2, Mars. I can't see where the two are comparable. But that's not to say it was not a bad match. I did get kind of fucking hoodwinked into thinking that it was going to be our boy Great O'Khan once again. I was like, what? They can't.
Well, he did. He attacked ELP after that, story because he beat ELP in the New Japan Cup. So they're going to have the curtain.
He did a little finger thing in the tape. You know, like, oh, of course.
Yes.
So I was like, wait a minute.
I thought you were going to say you were got excited because you thought it was going to be the Nomad Bishop Dyer. Who's still waiting for him to turn up.
Yep. Anytime.
Any minute now.
Yep. Planes just delayed. That's all. Yeah, I mean, listen, sometimes, you know, sometimes we hit home runs, sometimes we hit bunts, sometimes we whiff.
No, we did. It was fascinating, but it's a fascinating insight into the way that a booking plan clearly changed due to the backlash that I'm imagining in my head of the locker room saying, no, we don't want this guy in our company. So the fact that we were told, yes, he's definitely in, and then he wasn't, that is a great news story in and of itself. Not a whiff. No. Some card subject to change, Damon.
Thank you very much.
And even when that happens, that is a story in and of itself.
Perfectly said. Thank you for covering
it. I'm not taking the L on this one. No. No way.
No. I know. We can only give you what we get. I mean, who knows? TJP, what are we doing? What do we do with him?
Yeah, I don't know if I enjoy his work. I think I enjoy his work in singles matches significantly less than his tag work. When he was in that run towards the end of the Super Junior Tag League, particularly the final with Catch 2-2, absolutely thrilling. Like that little closing sequence, Robbie Eagles, just chef's kiss, masterful pro wrestling. But the single stuff, I don't know, just leaves me cold for some reason. It's not got that, the dynamism and the pacing that I like from him as a tag team wrestler. And I think he should be a tag team wrestler. And I know Akira is kind of getting a bit of a push as a singles guy, but he's just in a bit of a weird spot, TJP, because I think he's a really useful veteran hand in the company. Like, absolutely see the value in him and think he is, you know, one of the best tag wrestlers in the company at the moment. But him being positioned as this open weight captain of the United Empire just does nothing for me. I've got no interest in it.
Yeah, I'm not having it. Yeah. I agree 1,000%. Isn't that weird that any time that we have, even again, I don't even think they're big critiques. Like, I don't think they're big negatives. But when we do, it's usually after singles matches. That is accurate. Like, rarely are we talking about anything even remotely negative in tag situations. That's crazy kind of to think about. And maybe that's just a pacing thing, or maybe that's it's a big difference between having a 20-minute tag match and you working in your shit, as opposed to, okay, we got to go from bell to bell. That's an interesting thing. Yeah, he needs a tag partner. Toot sweet.
Jacob Austin Young. The JAY and TJP tag team. Just give it a try, lads.
Yeah. They'll do it. They listen.
Right. Second match. Yeah. Hiroshi Tanahashi final road kinship. Hiroshi Tanahashi defeats Satoshi Kojima. 6 minutes, 56 seconds. High fly flow.
Wow. I was shocked that he did it. I kind of felt like, well, first of all, when he...
You thought there'd be more respect shown for...
No.
MLW tag team champion. No. Satoshi. If he is a tag team champion, I don't know. He may not
be.
He might be
the world champion. Who knows at this point?
Assume that he is.
Yeah. He's got something going on here. I don't know what it is, but there's something that keeps him coming back.
Yes, it is. He is a champion. He's half of Cozy Max with Okamura.
There you go. See? Give him a little, they're like, you know, give him the title. So he has to come back and he don't mind. something.
So, yeah, does that mean Tanahashi is going to be challenging for the MLW tag titles at some point? Well, he's going to be getting himself a partner.
He's got to come to Chicago, right? He's got the Windy City, is it Riot or Windy City something or another? That's right around the corner, actually. April, right? No, I was surprised that he did it in the sense of, you know, his hips could just snap off and his knees shatter. Because, you know, in past matches, when he would attempt to do the little hurdle over the top rope and then scale said ropes to the top, it was always a little bit clumsy, a little bit not smooth and sleek like we remember. So when he did that, I was like, "Oh, okay." You know, he cleared the rope. That's good. That's a good sign. And he hopped up and did that in a 6-minute match. He probably didn't have to do that, but he did. And thank you for the 6-minute match. I thought the match was good. I thought it was fine. I didn't have any problems with it at all.
Yeah, they did all the moves that you would expect them to do.
Yeah, they, you know, you're going to hit each other hard in the chest. Nice safe spots. You know, look, I don't know how much either of these guys. Here's exactly what they have. They have 6-minute matches in them. I mean, that's perfect. And the fact that they both walked out of there relatively unscathed, good. That's all I want. That's all I want. Because look, even with the mileage that Tanahashi has, I kind of believe he's like hurt, like legitimately hurt. Over and above the mileage, the wear and tear on the body. Like, I think he's probably dealing with some stuff. And, you know, I just want to make sure he's able to be on these shows, because I think for a lot of these fans, you know, this is the last times they're going to be seeing him. You know, he does, you know, stuff outside Tokyo. You know, it's not going to be all the time that they're going to get to see him. So, yeah, the fact that he can, again, all that we're asking is 6-minute matches, and we're not looking for anything epic or major. Now, as we get closer to the end, I'm sure he's going to want to do some of that shit, but, you know, I think if he's smart, all the people really want is 6-minute matches. That's really all we want at this point. I don't think anybody is dialing up for a epic 20-minute match out of Hiroshi Tanahashi at this point. 6-minute matches, play the hits, do the pose, do the guitar, hug the fans, and we'll see you next time. That's all we want.
Third match was Chase Owens, Bad Luck Fale, Sonata defeating Takamichi Inoki, Taichi, and Yuya Uemura. Chase Owens, Jesus Christ, I've got the pin here. 8 minutes 26, package power driver on Takamichi Inoki. So just 5 guys or just 4 guys were invited into Hontai, and I think they've not sort of fully merged with them, but they are aligned with them, which is interesting because I've said for a while that to me, Yuya feels like the spiritual successor to Tanahashi. Mm-hmm. So I'll be interested to see if they do lock horns at some point this year. I imagine they would, and what the significance of that is. As far as the other team goes, I mean, what was the point of Chase and Farley coming out for the New Japan Cup? I thought there was going to be some massive Bullet Club angle where lines would be drawn in the sand. Turned out not to be the case. It looks like they are doing something with Sanada. And the thing about...
cheep. Look, well, I mean... They like him. The company likes the dude. That's what I can give you.
Who are we talking about? Sanada.
Well, they do like him, obviously, but also Chase. You know, I think you're not going to see. That's not the last time you're going to see him. And I think him looking strong. They like him. That's the best I can tell.
Yeah, I could settle for that if it's just him coming in to lose in the first round of the New Japan Cup and do World Tag League. And okay, if that's it, then I'll sort of hold my nose and accept that. As long as he's not
G1?
Getting close to G1s, then... no, because last time he was in the G1, everyone on our Discord had a collective mental breakdown.
Can I ask a question? And I know we kid around a lot. Do you think Chase Owens is a bad wrestler?
No.
All right. Does the Discord general consensus, do they think he's a bad wrestler?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, I think they do.
Okay. I mean,
I think he's a competent wrestler.
I think he's a good wrestler. I don't think he's tremendous. I think, you know, there's plenty of times where he's kind of, you could tell he's been sitting on his couch watching college football for months. But I don't think he's a bad wrestler. Do I think that there are people that I would rather see? Yes. Do I think that it's been a long time and maybe it's time to part ways? Yes. But I don't think he's a bad wrestler. I don't understand that, I guess. And I think what happens is that idea of I'm sick of them, we've seen them, there are plenty of other people I'd rather see, kind of bleeds into the idea of him being a quote bad wrestler. And I don't think he's bad. Like, he's never hurt anybody. He's never...
No. And I think there's a sort of unappreciated aspect of him in as much as what he offers to young lions who are on excursion in the States. My understanding is he does play some hand in that in terms of just making sure they're looked after, basically.
Oh, okay. See? All right. Look. I think he's fine. I'm not going to beat a dead horse, but... Yeah. Are there other people? Yes. But okay. Hey, can I just say something really incredibly dumb? Not that I haven't for the past 41 minutes, but I had no idea about Chris Bay.
What happened? Oh, what? That he was hurt?
Yeah. I mean, I know he was hurt, but I didn't know he was almost paralyzed. Was he paralyzed?
Yeah. No. Yes.
I had no idea. I promise you, I had no idea. I don't know what planet I was on and how I didn't know, but I had no idea. I was like, was that a match against the Hardys? I had no idea. Well, I was blown away. Probably blown away because I had no idea, but I just found out. But yeah, that sucked. I was like, what the fuck? All right, sorry to change gears there, but okay, let's move on.
That's quite all right. Fourth match was Bushi, Hiromu Takahashi, Tetsuya Naito defeating Jacob Austin Young, Callum Newman, Jeff Cobb. 8 minutes, 7 seconds. Hiromu maximum the holding on Jacob Austin Young. United Empire in such a...
There's a lot.
The doldrums, aren't they? I mean, why are they?
Why are they? You know what? I'm going to be honest with you. There's a lot of factions that I feel the same way. And you know me. I'm not Mr. Faction Guy. But it does feel like there are more than a few that are just like on life support. And yeah, United Empire, man, do you remember back when they had that little Reservoir Dog kind of picture? I guess they were in Shinjuku or wherever. And it was like, you know, the whole crew. And they all had, I don't know, they were on top of the fucking world then. And boy, has it just been just depleted. And I hate to say it, but do you find any use in Los Ingobernables anymore?
Ooh, that's a spicy one.
I am so over it.
Mm. Yeah, people are not going to want to like to hear this with their ears, but I think you might be right.
I know, I don't know. Like, I'm just, again, I understand the idea of the factions. We all get a fucking, I don't know. We need like a fucking... We need some kind of mix up there.
You know what? I think I don't like any of the factions.
I really don't. I like TMDK. I feel like they are a legitimate faction. And I guess you got, you know, of course, House of Torture. But like, think of that. Like, we're talking about the factions of New Japan, and we got to put House of Torture in like second or third, at least. You know what I mean? Like, where are we here? I just, yeah, factions stink. I hate them. Okay, sorry, good.
Right, where are we up to then? Fifth match, Taiji Ishimori, Driller Maloney, Gabe Kidd, defeating Sho Yujiro, Ren Narita, 8 minutes 57 seconds. So Driller got the pin over Sho after doing a Driller Killer.
Well, you know, heavyweight. Heavyweight Driller. This might be my least, in like, I know that we have a lot more yet to come when it comes to this.
This is hard work, isn't it? Like, yeah. Trying to extract talking points from this undercard, which was just nothing.
It was a lot of stuff.
I have nothing to say about this match. I've got nothing to say about the next match or the seventh match.
Well, let's skip it. Nothing. I mean, why are we trying to get, you know, pull, you know, turn water to wine here? It's what you would expect. I just go over the results and let's get to the meat.
Yeah. Okay. Sixth match, Shingo and Tsuji beat Kanemaru and Evil. Tsuji got the pin over Kanemaru, 9 minutes, 20 seconds. Gene Blaster, obviously want to keep him looking strong going into Genesis as the global heavyweight championship holder. Anything you want to say on any of these guys or this match?
Move on, please.
Move on. Seventh match, Despi, Oleg Bolton, Hiroki Goto defeating Hartley Jackson, Yohei Oiwa, and Zack Sabre Jr. 10 minutes, 20 seconds, GTR. Let's...
Yeah.
I don't know. Do we want to talk about Goto now? Because I've got some questions about
Goto. Let's do Goto.
Should we do these questions through the lens of who is challenging
let's
him?
Let's do that.
At Genesis. Yeah. Yeah, let's do that. Okay. Right. Well, main event, New Japan Cup final. David Finlay defeats Shota Umino, 27 minutes, 58 seconds, overkill.
You want to go first?
You have already shared your thoughts, haven't you? So I suppose I should go first.
Yeah, let's hear it. You got the floor.
Yeah, I thought it was fucking great. It's one of my favorite matches of the year. And I'll happily take an L because my expectations were pretty low going into it, given how Shota had performed throughout the tournament, just a lot of nothing matches. And yeah, we didn't really have high hopes with the repackaging of him. I thought it seemed a bit half-assed. But I think I did a disservice, not necessarily to him, but to David Finlay, mm-hmm. for not believing in Finlay and his ability to get a great match out of Shota. Because this... It's really special. I enjoyed this a lot. And, you know, Finlay's great to watch at the best of times. I just always like the way he puts a bit of extra venom in his moves. Even in this match, something as simple as the way he does a side Russian leg sweep. He's just like slamming the back of Shota's head into the mat. Like, he looks like he's actually trying to hurt his opponent when he's doing it. I just love those rough edges in the way that he wrestles. Just that added bit of fuck you that make his matches seem so rough and gritty. Like, he wrestles guys in a way that makes me think he genuinely dislikes them. And I don't know about it. Like, I don't think he's ever going to be a top, top guy in the company. Like, he's not going to be the poster child. He's not going to be, like, I don't think he's going to be getting to, I don't know, like a Will Ospreay level of being celebrated worldwide as one of the best in the world. But he could and should be a vital dance partner for this crop of young stars that are coming through now to help them get where they need to be. And this match was, I think, proof of concept of that. I just love the character beats, like when he was teasing the count out and he goes out of the ring and he said, oh, we're going to finish this in the ring. And then he just did another move and threw it back out of the ring and tried to get another count out. Just little things like that. I love about him. He's so fun to watch. And yeah, I think Finlay did a much better job showcasing Shota Umino's strengths and structuring a match to make him look good than Zack Sabre Jr. did at Wrestle Kingdom.
Yep.
Maybe he learned from their mistakes.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've got to say it as well. Really impressed with Shota here. I think he's starting to define his in-ring style more as other people have said it, like a Kensuke Sasaki style power wrestler, and he just looks the part, doesn't he? He's not great at the the more intricate stuff, like the cute counters, they didn't really come off very well. They didn't come off cleanly enough to get the desired effect. But if we look at the absolute basics here, he is thick. He's muscular. Like, that's something people don't really talk about. But Shota's built like a brick shithouse now. He is in incredible shape. And with that, he is very believable as a powerhouse. Because you can do that and do that sort of Sasaki-style wrestling without it coming across like you're trying to copy someone else's style. Anyone can do that. Anyone can be chunky and hit people really hard. You're off to a winner then, and no one's going to complain. And I don't know if it was that tweak in presentation and the way he is wrestling, but you could sense in this match at least that he is starting to get that buy-in from the crowd. They were starting to believe in him. There was some chance for his name. The strikes were improving. He's laying it in nice and snug. God, and then we got to that bit in the match. Everyone's favourite bit. The headbutt. And then that knee where, God bless Finlay, like running headfirst into that knee. I jumped out of my chair. That was nasty business. And it came across perfectly because he didn't hold back. Finlay bumped like a fucking champ for him. The selling was immaculate. And when the crowd erupted for that, I just had this big grin on my face because it felt, for the first time since probably the Ospreay match, that Umino was starting to figure things out. And then at that point, I was along for the ride. I'd stopped watching the match with my critical eye trying to point out all of Shota's flaws because I was bought in. I was ready to enjoy the match. As a fan, it just sort of washed over me like a revelation that just as Shota seemed to have finally clicked and started to get that cheering from the fans, he had to lose. I was like, he's got to lose now. And then if he loses, then we've got something here. Then we're cooking. And so it played out. Closing sequence was great. Like when Finlay hit the overkill, just that little stagger that Shota did before he fell over and then it was done. It's perfect. And they've obviously got really good chemistry. Like they spoke in the build-up to the match about their time in the dojo together. And I think Finlay has a lot of respect for Shota because the way that they wrestled this, like he went above and beyond to make Shota look good in a way that a lot of very high-profile wrestlers have failed to do over the last 12 months. And Finlay managed to make this into what I thought was a great match. You know, it had its flaws. It wasn't perfect. Like I said, some of the counter stuff was not great. I actually enjoyed the opening sequence. I know some people have sort of hand-waved it, but like the leg work that he did on Finlay and then the stuff that Finlay was doing outside, I found that really absorbing. So, yeah, my only gripe really with those counters, which just looked a bit messy. But aside from that, this was one of my favourite matches of the year. And even the post-match stuff, where Finlay's kind of grabbing Shota by the face and telling him, like, you got to do it my way. And that opens up a whole realm of possibilities. What does he mean by that? Like, is he saying that he needs to join the War Dogs? Or is he saying that he's got to start his own faction? Are we going to get, what is it you called them? The Wild Cards. Are we going to get the Wild Cards faction at some point in the future where Shota is leading his own group of guys? The crowd seem to love Finlay, which is really encouraging to see. He just seems like a made man at this point. And yeah, I sort of chopped and changed with my predictions of this New Japan Cup because Gabe Kidd was getting so hot that I thought, well, you have to pivot and you have to run with him at the moment. But of course, that's not how New Japan do things. And I should have stuck with my pick because I've said, I don't know, about a year ago that I thought this was the right spot. Finlay needed to win this New Japan Cup and become the champion. And so it may turn out to be the case. Now, I'll save that conversation for later on. Mm-hmm. But on the whole, I just thought this was an outstanding match. Really excited by Shota's progression. Now, that does come with a heavy asterisk. Like, I think, for me, having a great match with Finlay now comes with a similar asterisk as having a great match with Will Ospreay. Now, I'm not saying they're at the same level.
I'm glad you said it. Go ahead.
Yeah, Finlay managing to have a great match with someone doesn't mean that they're a great wrestler. I think what Finlay can do now is lead, I don't want to say inferior, but yeah, an inferior opponent to a match that is more than the sum of its parts. which he couldn't always do. You know, he couldn't always say that for David Finlay. But now I think he is excellent at doing that. And, you know, I've spoken to people in the company who share that thought, like, this guy is the fucking truth. He is. And I know Finlay sort of turned into a bit of a culture war for New Japan fans because he doesn't get the respect and acknowledgement that he deserves from casual fans. So there's kind of a tendency to sort of go to the other extreme and say, oh, he's the best wrestler in the world. I don't think he's the best wrestler in the world. I do think he's the best wrestler in New Japan at the moment. And I've said that before. So it's just great to see him get his moment and win this trophy, which, you know, maybe he was supposed to win it last year. Who knows? Because, you know, he was got that illness, injury, whatever it was, and was unable to compete. And that led to Goto being where he is now. So it's a lot of really interesting narrative threads going into this. And as for Shota, I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm not ready to say, oh, he's done it. Everything's clicked. He's figured it out. There's still a long way to go. But in terms of the in-ring, I think this is working for him. Rather than trying to do flashy looking moves, which come across as inauthentic, him just laying it in snug and hitting people really hard, that's good. I like that. And in terms of the sort of gimmick, the aesthetic of him, he's kind of a blank slate at this moment. And I'm interested to see sort of as it goes on, what little extras, what little accoutrements he adds to that and what direction that goes in. Whereas prior to this match, I didn't really give a shit and I actively resented him because I felt he was an inferior wrestler getting forced down our throats. Now I can see, okay, there is something there. Now he's still a very, very long way from being the finished article. He's very inconsistent and he's just as likely to have an absolute nothing match as he is a great match. Actually, probably more likely to have a nothing match given his track record. But I feel he's on the right path and I don't know if it's like the team around him, the people that are in his ear sort of helping him with his presentation will be encouraged by this and seeing what is working and what's resonating with the crowd and being able to take that to natural and logical extensions rather than just having a guy, okay, this is the roughneck and he's got a motorcycle and he's got Mox's jacket and he's got Tanahashi's tights and here he is. This is what he is. Yeah. So I kind of like the uncertainty there and the narrative stuff as well with him rejecting Tanahashi's handshake and with what Finlay said to him, and it could go in a lot of interesting directions there. So definitely some green shoots there with Shota Umino to be optimistic about. And yeah, I'm a lot more positive coming out of this match than I thought I was going to be when we previewed the match last week.
Yeah. A lot of good points. First of all, let me address that David Finlay bandwagon that you have been the conductor of is getting quite kind of full, right? A lot of people jumping on board. Glad to have you, because you know, not for nothing, Joel was felt like he was right in front of that one, and a lot of people on board now. Good to see. Second. You know, I think everyone is in agreement that David Finlay calling this match and working this match was, as I called it, a masterpiece in the sense of he did everything he possibly could to not only get sympathy for Shota, but also, you know, make him be this fucking tough, just a physical, dare I say, bully. It was, you know, the crowd with Shota coming out first, you know, they were sitting on their hands. You know, we were excited. But slowly and surely the sympathy built and built and built until, you know, finally it was kind of like that release and that spot that you talked about. I think Shota did very well for himself. And, you know, but let's be truthful here. All he had to do was listen and keep up. Because that was David Finlay calling that match. The fact that, you know, after the fact of the knee strike, and you're dead right in the sense that David Finley just laying it all out there and saying, all right, hit me as, you know, fucking lay into me, you dick. I think dick is carny, by the way, through the carnival years, language, wrestling language. Hit me as hard as you fucking can, dick. And then also the clothesline was pretty amazing, too. Like, there was, that was pretty intense.
Yeah, he's got a hell of a lariat on him. Like, yeah. That should probably be his finisher. Does that look great?
Yeah, it really did.
And it's made me excited to see, like, I want to see him in big, high-profile, heated matches with guys who can wrestle that style, like a Gabe Kidd, for example. With that on the right, so it's like, that could be a Tokyo Dome main event with the right build, like them two. And, you know, what a great story that is with the guy who has been groomed to be the future New Japan ace from the moment he laced up his boots to the guy who was, you know, about to jump off the building, you know, that gone from undesirable to undeniable and now is the anti-hero beloved by the New Japan fans. Like, what a great story that would be. And I just want to see them two in the ring beating the shit out of each other, basically.
Yeah, I mean, and if he can tap into that, and hopefully he continues too, because again, that's going to be the real test to me, right? That's going to be like, okay, you know, it's David laying out this match is one thing, but okay, can we see this in, you know, continue? The crowd from that moment, again, he was building sympathy, kind of, you know, trying it, and again, David being the dick that he is, just, you know, just laying it on heavy, and then boom, then you saw the grit, and then you saw the sandpaper, and then you saw that moment was like, I'm really hard pressed to think of another time where that was the case, where it was just like, okay, you know, it woke up everybody, and everybody talks about that, you know, 30 second run of, okay, here we go. And then the crowd was into it, and the crowd was, it felt like more behind them, and a nice little sequence. And then, there was a sense of, you know, air being let out of the balloon, which is perfect. And once again, the post-match stuff was really fitting as well. Look, I'm very high on this match. I'm super high on David Finley. The one thing that I they give him the freedom, kind of like what they do to Gabe Kidd to a certain degree, of David making this not only match but like this run of his. Into being, he works so much better when he is that physical, you know, in your face, beat the shit out of you guy. That's a sweet spot for him. And I think it's amazing that, you know, you go through the laundry list of names on that roster that couldn't pull it off with Shota. And again, there's circumstances, and I know that there's, you know, some differences and nuances that I'm glazing over, but David Finley did it. He did it. You know, that was all Shota had to do was follow along, and this would have worked. And he did. And I think he went over and above just following along, to be clear. But this is years, excuse me, years of Finley watching and learning and honing and watching and learning. And being left out and watching and paying dues and learning. And it's all paid off. It's all paid off. You know why he's one of my favorites? It's because of all the naysayers. Because to this day, there are people that have watched before, in and out, and they hear the name and they instantly go back to Young Lion, him and Jay White rolling around for fucking 10 minutes in a ring in black tights. And it's not the same. And I don't know, maybe it's our little secret. Maybe it's our little prize secret gift that we get. But he's made it work. And he's made it, and he's taken advantage of a lot of the opportunities that he's been given. And it doesn't feel like he's been given a ton, you know, previous to this run. This is, I said it. It was a masterclass in getting help, doing everything he possibly could to not only get the win and move on and be in the record books as New Japan Cup winner. He did everything in his power during that match to get over a guy that needed it so. Needed it so. That's my friends, is Ric Flair-esque. 80s Ric Flair-esque. Where, again, he might get the win, but he made his fucking opponent look like he was a fucking ass hair away from stealing the title. And the sympathies and the baby face comeback and all of it. All of it. I mean, again, different time, different everything, but that's what makes great pro wrestlers. It's not the fucking triple axel flip-a-doo off the top rope. That does not make you a great pro wrestler. What makes you a great pro wrestler is accomplishing two things that were near impossible previously in just a short few months. That's a good pro wrestler, kids. Let it be known.
So I made a really good point as well on Twitter. It was Colt of the HLL Roa who said, "What I love is that Finlay, along with Tsuji, Gabe, and you have shifted the house style of the promotion. We're long past the days of the Okada, Omega, Osprey style." And yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah. It feels like we are in the era of dudes beating the shit out of each other. And it's awesome.
It is.
Right? And we've got a few questions about this. So Nathan said, "Would New Japan have always had to have changed the house style to find their feet again post Okada, Osprey, etc.? Feels like by switching it to be more hard-hitting, you can avoid direct comparisons with the previous era and almost draw a line under it." And Jack says, "With the rise of new main eventers like Finlay, Tsuji, and arguably Goto as well, it feels like NJPW fans are now gravitating towards shorter and simpler main events with more old-school sensibilities. Is the era of the New Japan epic finally dead, and is that a good thing?"
You know, that's a great point. I don't know if it was like they were sitting in a conference room and saying, "Okay, this is how we're going to do it." I think a lot of that does come organically, but, and I don't want to say it's easy by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, if you want to get over a sense of, I put it in air quotes, realism and stuff that is easy to conceptualize and easy to for fans to digest, easier. I think it's a smart way to go. And as hard hitting and I'm, you know, trust me, I'm not in the locker room. I don't know how many fucking ice packs these guys got on them after matches, but I'm gonna say something. You know, I'm not hot take, but like, you know, that's a relatively safe style. Hitting, you know, you're hitting people as hard as you can in safe spots. Safer spots is New Japan, mind you. But yeah, that's a very good point. And like I said, I don't think it was conjured up in a boardroom, you know, on a conference call. I think it happens organically. But I do like the fact that there is that line in the sand. We went through a period of time where, you know, we had a run of some of the greatest pro wrestling, different style. And yeah, maybe they are. Maybe fans kind of are yearning for hard-hitting, shorter matches. You don't need to have the epic, drawn-out, post-30-minute match main event. I'm here for that. Yeah, I'm down for that. Because, truth be told, some of those, you know, your Hashimoto's, you know, Norton's, and, you know, your harder-hitting, I wouldn't go so far as to say what we traditionally might say, like never style, but almost never style of, again, very physical, hard hitting. Yeah, maybe that's the thing that is people will eat up. And it felt like they did. It takes time. It does take time. But yeah, I think they're on to something. Absolutely.
Well, of course, Finlay's going to go and challenge Hiroki Goto for the World Heavyweight Championship. Oh, no, not the World Heavyweight Championship. The IWGP World Championship at Sacred Genesis. And yeah, that leaves a lot of interesting questions because Goto is doing really good business at the moment as champion. I think people, that is resonating with people, and we're getting really good gates with him on top.
Yeah.
And I think there is still a lot of value to be extracted from that. However, that should never be the primary motivator in who you are booking as your world champion. I think the duty, first and foremost, is to tell interesting stories. That has always got to come first. Like booking pro wrestling, booking a wrestling company is not just a case of looking at the spreadsheet, seeing who does the highest gates, and then, right, well, they're going to be world champion until those numbers start dropping, and then we're going to give it to the next guy.
Right.
So I think there is a lot to be said for cutting short that Goto run while people are still enjoying it and leaving people wanting more and thinking, I wanted to see him hold that championship for a bit longer, and having that appetite for him, you know, potentially getting it back again in the future. So I do think it's time for Finlay to win.
Ooh.
I think if he challenges Goto at Sacred Genesis and he loses, whilst that might be a nice moment for Goto, I just feel like it's Finlay's time.
Me too.
And I think him having a run as champion, and then the next person, the person who manages to beat him for that title, would gain a hell of a lot from that. And I think Finlay has proved his value to the company, and I think a run with him as world champion would be really exciting. So we do have some questions about that. So Matt says, what are the chances that the Goto Revolution can continue past Sacred Genesis? Is there a chance that Evil and House of Torture get involved in the finish? And he says, sub question if you fancy it. If Goto can get some defences in, who would you like to see? My head is going to Shingo, Ishii, Oiwa, Hanare have some Never Classics for the big boy belt. And Burninghammer says Goto will keep the title until Dominion, where he will be defeated by heel. That is not Finlay? Question mark. And yeah, I mean, I can see why people want that. And there's a little bit of me that wants him to hold it until Dominion and just see what kind of number we could get at Osakajo Hall with Goto as champion. That would be really intriguing to me. But to me, I think the right play is to end it here and leave people wanting more and crown Finlay as your new champion. I'm not sure if I would want that match to play out the same way that the match did for them at the tail end of last year, like with the kids ringside and Finlay saying horrible things to them and it being a big heartbreaking thing. I think I would prefer something different. I don't know what exactly, but
scaffold, man.
Yeah, it just feels like if they go, yeah, well, if they, it's just, not in terms of like having a gimmick for the match, but just the vibes of the match.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not really explaining myself very clearly.
No, I get it.
But I feel like they need to do something different. Like almost just like have a straight match. Like forget, don't bring the kids ringside. Just don't do all of that. It doesn't need it, right? These are two great wrestlers. Let's just have them go out there and have a great wrestling match and see who the best man is, rather than having to lean on the smoke and mirrors of, what a dastardly man. He's saying nasty things to the children.
You don't want the kids to get involved in the match? Like slap David Finlay so he can sell it and roll backwards like a dude with like a backflip backwards, you know, oversell it. You don't want that? You don't think that's a good idea?
Just like twisting inside out, like doing a sort of shooting star kind of sell. Oh! Yeah.
You don't want that?
With Goto's 8-year-old daughter, she knocks his block off. Yeah.
Yeah, laying it in. My lone concern. Well, first, let's say this. I don't think the Kikuchi notebook, I don't think we stray from that. Like, I think there's a plan in place, and we move forward. Like, this is, it doesn't, like, in my mind and in the, you know, my experience, this is not a company that pivots quickly when it comes to that, you know, injuries and you know, things out of their hands aside. So I don't think they would. I don't think they would look at the ledger and say, ah, Goto's doing very well. You know, let's change plans. That said, even though we are showering praise on David Finley, there is a slight concern on my part of numbers. I can't lie. You know, we have a hot hand here. We're making some money. And yes, I truly believe that the first priority should be what you described. That being said, how many times can you name things that technically would be creative and you would think, oh, this is what we need to do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, with, you know, various other promotions, including New Japan. And it, you know, it shits the bed at the gate and, you know, it's like, okay, well, maybe this wasn't a great idea. That's my only concern.
Should we care about that, though? Should we care if it shits the bed at the gate?
Yes, we have to. Because guess what? If they don't make money, there are no shows. You know, like, people have to get paid. And
okay, right. Just devil's advocate here. Yeah. I think it was Andrew on our Discord who was saying that he likes New Japan sort of dancing on the edge in terms of, like, knowing for these big shows, they need to deliver a quality card top to bottom, no bullshit, in order to get as many bums and seats as they can, rather than when they were sort of coasting along sort of 2018, 2019 and spreading all their big matches out over a series
of shows
rather than putting them all on one big show, knowing that they need to draw that venue for that show. So
yeah, but that'll
do you have any...
That'll never happen. I hate to say it, but when business is good, they're going to try and squeeze more out of it. When business is down, you know, obviously they're not running nine fucking, you know, Dontaku shows.
Well, you say that. Yeah. Are you aware of Junior Genesis?
No, help me out.
Right, so Junior Genesis, this is the day before Sakura Genesis.
Go ahead.
They're running a show at Corcoran Hall.
Yeah.
Where they have put the Junior Tag Team Championship match and the Junior Heavyweight Championship match on that show rather than having them on Sakura Genesis.
I kind of like that.
Is it? Or is this a sign of New Japan doing too well, being too successful, and now they're trying to spread themselves again like they did in the dark days of 2018 and 2019?
No, I kind of like it. I actually do find that idea pretty creative. I like that. It's fine. But again, getting back to the point, you know, David Finley on top. Well, I'm sure a lot of those tickets were sold already. Look, the bottom line is that what brings people to the arena isn't necessarily great matches per se. It's I want to see this match and, you know, what's going to happen. And that's booking and storylines and stuff like that. And having great pro wrestling and physical pro wrestling. And, you know, what makes New Japan Pro Wrestling great is that, you know, by and large, it doesn't rely on the hokey and it relies on, hey, I want your fucking title and I'm going to kick your ass for it. And that's that. And that's what, you know, that's what we all kind of hold on to. Again, my only concern is, can David Finley, you know, like if David Finley wins, Joel, and we have a consecutive run of gates that weren't the same as last year and maybe somewhat disappointing, you know, I don't think anybody in the company wants that. I think people would be disappointed. Match quality aside. Like I do, but I think that they both go hand in hand, right? And both can be accomplished, and the best pro wrestling usually does. They both kind of are in sync with each other. So, while I do have concerns, I will also say that, you know, if the story is good enough and you know, the people can make a connection with the people in the ring and want to buy a ticket. That's the name of the game. And I think that can happen with what we have right now. It absolutely can. And that doesn't mean that we have to pivot and say, okay, Goto, you know, run with this. I know there's going to be a lot of hindsight, you know, and a lot of, Monday morning quarterbacks, as they say, if they make the change and Finley, you know, money-wise. Wait, let's put it this way. Zach, do you think Zach's title run was a good or bad? If you had to just be black or white about it.
Bad.
Okay, why?
Because of the numbers.
Thank you. And I think if Finley's are the same, you would say the same, right?
Actually, no. I'm going to backtrack. It was not just that. I think that Wrestle Kingdom main event is probably what is going to...
Did more harm than good.
Consign that. To, yeah.
It's fair. But, again, the whole package, you know, listen, he's my favorite fucking wrestler. Gates were down. What are you going to do? And I'm not saying they pivoted at that point, but maybe they sped things up. Who knows? Look, it is my concern, and it's my lone concern. You got a hot hand in Goto, but I think you also have a hot hand in David Finley. Let's see what the fuck he can do. Maybe he surprises everybody and Gates double. Hey, what the fuck? Who knows? And they do 9 shows, you know, leading up to, you know, fucking, who knows? World Tag League. I don't know. Who cares? You get my point.
Yeah. Right. We've got some questions.
Go ahead. Give me a couple more.
Okay. Before that, I just want to talk you through the cards for Sacred Genesis and Junior Genesis. So Junior Genesis, we're getting on Friday, April 4th at Corcoran Hall. And I'm just going to skip to the top end of the card where we've got 6th match is for the Junior Heavyweight Tag Titles. Ichiban Sweet Boys Kosei Fujita, Robbie Eagles against challengers Robbie X and Taiji Ishimori. And their main event is an IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship hardcore match. El Desperado defending against Clark Connors. What I will do full breakdown and preview of this next week. So I don't want to shoot our load too early, but that's that. And then for Sakura Genesis itself, the next day at the Ryogoku Sumo Hall, we've got a kickoff match with Katsuyo Murashima against Daiki Nagai. First match, special singles match, Yuya Uemura versus Sanada. Second match for the TV Championship, ELP against Great Okan. Third match, Hiroshi Tanahashi Final Road Connection, Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Shota Umino. Mm. Fourth match, Never Openweight 6-Man Tag Championship match. The champions Sho, Yujiro and Ren defending for the first time against Ishimori, Driller Maloney and Gabe Kidd. Fifth match, Never Openweight Championship match, Konosuke Takeshita defending against Yohei Oiwa. Sixth match is the tag championship match with Hiromu and Naito defending against Callum Newman and Jeff Cobb. Seventh match, Global Heavyweight Championship, Tsuji defending against Evil. And main event, World Heavyweight Championship match, Goto against Finlay.
It's a pretty good card. That's a good card. I'll tell you what, the one match that sticks out for me is that Tanahashi Shota match. You would think that it would be a perfect opportunity to add a little bit more sandpaper, right? That'd be fun. We'll see what happens there. Yeah, that's not a bad show.
Should be a squash match, that. Again, we'll preview it next week. But I think, I think you should just beat the piss out of Tanahashi in about 4 minutes.
Cut his hair, shave his head. That match should go. Shave his head. That's what I want.
That piss on him.
Wow. Jeez Louise. All right. That's not a bad show. That's a good show. I like that.
Okay, Burning Hammer says, who's your early pick for Tanahashi's last opponent at Wrestle Kingdom? Okay. Is Gabe Kidd the right choice after this year's emotional response by Tana to Gabe's match? Yes, I like that. There's value in that. I still think if you can do it, Shinsuke Nakamura would be my number one pick.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't we hear that? Did we hear that? We heard that.
Yeah, it's something that they want, but obviously a lot of moving parts to that.
Yeah, I think That's the one. I don't think they would do Okada. I there has been a lot of talk of Shinsuke, though. That's for sure.
Sci-Fi says, I started watching New Japan with this year's Wrestle Kingdom, and while maybe that show was disappointing, so far I think I picked a great time to jump on. I just like to know what parts of New Japan recent history should I check out to better understand things going on right now.
Wow. Well, completely skip 2000 and 2001. pretend that didn't happen. Just don't even bother.
No, I said recent history. What counts as recent history? Because yeah. I don't. I'd be tempted to. You know, people are going to say, "Oh, watch Okada versus Omega." But if we're talking recent history, I think we're looking for stuff that involves guys on the current roster.
Cage match. Start there. No, not the website. The.
Oh, I think
go cage match. I'm looking for stars. United Empire, Bullet Club, War Dogs, that cage match. I think that's a good little everybody that's in that match. Well, not everybody, but the majority of people. You get to see the tide changing. You know, you get to see how the company is morphing. You know, I think that show is a real good starting point. Actually, that's where I would point people to.
I would be sort of thinking of crafting a list whereby you're identifying who are the top guys in New Japan for like now or the near future, and thinking what is a match that you would recommend that is that guy in its purest form. So, for example, Gabe. I'm thinking like, okay, Yuya Uemura, I think, is going to be a future star in the company. What is a Yuya match that I think shows him at his best? And for that, I would say the Takeshita match in last year's G1 Climax.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yep.
So who would you say, like, again, I'll be thinking Gabe Kidd, Tsuji. Like, are there any... Gabe Kidd, I mean, you can't really do better than the Kenny Omega match, which I'm assuming this person's already seen. Yeah. Yota Tsuji, what would you say is like the standout Tsuji match, where if you were showing it to a guy who's never seen Tsuji before, you'd be like, watch this, that is Yota Tsuji. Hmm.
You think his title win?
Possibly. Maybe the New Japan Cup final against
the one previous. Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah, I think those are two solid picks. Sure. How about Ren Narita? Good luck. But here's the thing, though. Like, I don't think you're going to get too top heavy with House of Torture stuff. But like I said, I think having a little taste of that to see what they bring to the table might be interesting from a new eyeball perspective. I would go back to that cage match. I think that is when we had a clean sheet of paper and we were working. A lot of the guys were leaving right around that show. Will and Okada, was that the same show where Okada hand waves Okan or Okan, in the middle of the aisle.
I don't think it was that show. I think that show was where he wrestled Tanahashi. That was the last singles match.
You're right.
The Okan snub was one of the follow up.
Okay,
shows.
All right. Well, then, just follow the timeline. I not to beat a dead horse, but I would start there. Yeah, I think that's a good point.
The Ichiban Sweet Boys against Catch 2-2 match.
Oh yeah, final. Yeah,
November the finals. El Phantasma versus Takeshita. That's a great one from the G1. Tsuji versus Zach in the G1.
Yeah, Zach winning G1. I think that was a nice little run. Yeah, I think that's a good. Definitely, you want to watch. Look, if you're hopping into New Japan, it's really revolves around, and people will debate. You know, you could throw Dominion in there, and you can throw New Beginnings in there, and you can throw Wrestle Kingdom and G1. Right, the G1's your center point.
I always see like these threads popping up on like Reddit with people saying, "Oh, I've just got into New Japan. what would you recommend I watch? And people are recommending matches between guys who don't work for the company.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
I don't fucking recommend stuff. Because then they're going to be like, oh, these guys are awesome. Where can I watch them? Oh, they wrestle for AEW now.
Right, right. Yeah, it doesn't seem that the miss the point there. Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah. And again, you can go through the whole 2 years of Gabe Kidd, and I guarantee you, you will find shit that you like.
The Hanare match.
I forgot about the whole. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's also included in that fucking cage match. That's why I think that's so special. That whole sequence of fucking Gabe Kidd and Hanare. Whew. What a fucking time. Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing, too. Wouldn't you do anything to kind of have that Men in Black boop, erase your memory and have everything be fresh? I think that would be so fucking exciting. That would be really crazy. Did that person mention, like, are they young? Are they, like, in age? Or did they follow wrestling and come back? Or they just never found a way to get the New Japan? I'm kind of curious as to how...
I didn't ask their life story, Dave.
Come on! Jesus, I want to know. Question. I want to know their main
relax.
Name. I want to know it all. Yes. All right, my bad. All right, what else we got? Anything else? One more. This show just came on.
No, Cheryl's home. We end the podcast now.
Done.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I'm also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.